scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoogian of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man, as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoogian making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
It seems quite hypocritical, actually, for secular progressives on the one hand to say that people ought not to bring religious arguments and religious motivations into the public square, and then on the other hand, to praise Martin Luther King for his work and witness.
Christus Victor is Christ, whom the Father sends into the flesh precisely so that he can defeat the enemies of the human race. He's the great warrior striding onto the field.
Then the Lutherans, they brought us over here.
Everybody blames the Lutherans.
Missouri dairy farmers love Issues Etc.
I think we all remember being asked that question when we were young. What do you want to be when you grow up? It's a good question. It's a question that sets young minds to thinking most of the time when you're very young. That thinking is, well, to be honest, somewhat unrealistic. What do you want to be when you grow up? Sometimes you think in terms of maybe what your dad does, or you think about maybe in terms of what your heroes do. A lot of young men want to grow up and be famous baseball players or football players, and that doesn't happen. So how do you ask that question of young children in a way, and when do you ask that question of young children in a way that does not rob them of their childhood, or does not give them the impression that that is really what this is all about? That's what life is all about, finding that one job that you're going to do for the rest of your life, and it kind of defines who you're going to be for the rest of your life. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, April the 11th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us here in the first hour of the program for part 16 of our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. Today, helping your children find a vocation, or maybe vocations in the plural. A little bit later in hour two, we're going to talk about those statewide teachers' strikes. Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, will be our guest, and will be joined in the last half hour to talk about megachurch pastor Bill Hybels' resignation last night. 6 months early from his projected date for retirement, he announced he's resigning. We'll find out why. It is amidst allegations of sexual misconduct. We'll be talking with Manya Brashear Pashman, the religion reporter for the Chicago Tribune. She has done most of the work investigating that story for the last several years. You can join us with questions or comments. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us for our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism, talking about helping our children find their vocations, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, senior pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Rockford, Illinois, host of a radio talk show called Sharper Iron, author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible, and a forthcoming publication, Echo, Unbroken Truth, Worth Repeating. Jonathan, welcome back.
It's good to be back, Todd. Thank you.
So what's the danger of that question, what do you want to be when you grow up, putting an emphasis on that too early or too often with our children?
Well, I might even take issue a little bit with what you said earlier, that that's not a bad question. I think the best I can say about it is that it is a misinformed question that unintentionally puts a child, or a young adult even, in some very awkward places to have to think, particularly given their developmental levels. And I suppose this struck me most. I mean, I've heard people talk about it as well in the way I'm going to, constructively criticizing it. But it struck me when I believe it was one of my children around age 9 or so met somebody. It might have been in a church social event of some kind. And the lady, with no ill will or malice, asked my little girl, you know, "So what are you going to be when you grow up?" And I watched my child really struggle, even emotionally, to comprehend the question itself. In some ways, because we have put a lot of capital on teaching our children to embrace who they are as God has designed them. So, for example, our daughters are being taught to grow up into women. That's our hope for them. Our son is being taught to grow up to be a man. That's our hope for him. And in this, we do hope and encourage them to marriage, recognizing, you know, singleness, and that is not nothing wrong with that for a lifetime, but we encourage them to marriage, and we encourage them to see family and children as a good thing. But that wasn't what this question was asking in any way, shape, or form. And we haven't spent much time with our 9-year-old trying to select their career path just yet. In fact, with our daughters, we tell them pretty straightforward, you don't have to have a career. You don't have to grow up and get a job. Not necessarily. I mean, God willing, you'll be able to do what you want to do. And if that means you stay home and you have some kids and you raise them, then that's great too. But the place that my child was put into then was one of having to magically discern an answer to something she was entirely unprepared for by us as parents. But on top of that, unprepared for as a 9-year-old. I mean, what have we actually exposed a 9-year-old to just in the American educational system? You've got a little bit of math, a little bit of reading, science class where you kind of maybe look at some pictures of clouds, but there's not a lot of actual hands-on chemistry work going on at that point. Some social studies classes where you see pictures of people from all over the world, maybe some band and sports. So your options of I'm going to be this are incredibly limited. And then you're asking a child with the experience of 9 years of life, how much of that is mentally rememberable for them? Well, maybe 6, maybe 5 years of that. How much of that can they really think about and apply? You're asking them to look twice their lifetime and then some into the future and tell you what they're going to be doing in a world which, according to our Christian worldview, we have no idea what tomorrow's going to bring. We have no idea what the future of the world's going to be like. I know everything's gone on as it seems to have gone on from the beginning and all that, but there's a lot of change going on. The jobs that are available today to do, if you want to have a career, are very different than the jobs that were available 30 years ago. So to have that be the thing that, say, in a classroom or in parenting, we would turn into or put forward or put upon our children as sort of the chief goal, the chief answering question that they really have to use to find, and really in our way of thinking as Americans, to create their future identity, I think is misguided on a whole number of levels. And that's not even without getting into the fact that this is one more piece of the hypermodern you must define yourself reality, so that what you will be 30 years from now is in your control. It's in your hands. You are the author of your own destiny. Whatever you want to do, put your mind and your heart to it, you can do it. Now, I don't want to say, and please don't hear me saying, that there is not a need to help our children learn how to embrace the vocations in which they can and will succeed. But I think discovering vocations, discovering gifts and talents that can be used, whether as career or simply as volunteer or serving capacity, I think that's a very different question than what do you want to be when you grow up? The question, what do you want to be when you grow up, implies you're not what you want to be now, right? And this 9-year-old kid has no framework, physically or intellectually, for handling the question. Why didn't the person ask my child, what do you like doing? Because there, they would have had a conversation with my kid. Opening thoughts.
So you just mentioned a different question. Why is that a better question? Explain that.
Well, first, the child could comprehend it, right? So you want to have this conversation with the child, which would lead them toward what they are going to maybe do the rest of their life. You're trying to figure out what they enjoy, right? Isn't that sort of what we want to ask them? You know, do you want to go dig dinosaur bones? Why? Because I like dinosaurs. I think they're cool. That kind of thing. But it's engaging the child on a level the child's experience has brought them to a place where they can understand and they can express. Doubly so, if we are going to raise our children to be dutiful citizens of the world God designed, in which They serve their neighbors. The way that they are going to find themselves most fulfilled is by serving their neighbors with things that do, in fact, bring them joy. So if you just absolutely despise green plants, you hate them, you don't want to eat them, you don't want to grow them, right? You're not going to enjoy having your hands in the ground very often. As a result, you're probably not going to end up being a farmer. But rather than talking about being a farmer, why don't we just encourage our children to get their hands in the ground anyway, right? And this gets us a little bit toward, we've referenced this before, but the classical mind and the ideas of behind classical education wasn't so much that we're going to give you a bunch of knowledge you have to know so that you can have good jobs when you grow up. It was more about, we want to expose you to as broad a spectrum of ideas as possible so that we can find out which ones make you tick and where your own mind gets drawn to more. Because as you explore these various sciences, if we can call them that, you're going to find yourself being drawn to some of them. And chances are the ones you're drawn to, you probably won't be good at them right away. Nobody knows how to add 2 + 2 without being taught and practicing a few times. But as you're drawn to it, as you're compelled by the concept or the idea or the science or the study, you are going to get good at it, right? And then the better you get at that thing, the more you're going to have something to do to serve others with it. So in that regard, the real goal here, I think, if we're going to, because the conversation here is about how do you help a child figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their life? How do you help a child decide on a career path or not to have a career path? It does begin at certain levels with just helping the child find out what they do well, or I say it poorly, what they like to do. Because what they like to do, they're going to do more. And if they do it more, they're going to get better at it. None of us are just native geniuses who are good at everything. But practice, well, that does create talent or builds on talent. But you aren't going to enjoy practice if you don't enjoy it, right? So the question, what do you like to do, is really the opening salvo for discovering the path a child can take the rest of their life. Now, I do want to reemphasize again that there are these vocations that are going to be with us no matter who we are. You know, if you're born to a family, you're going to have parents and you're going to be a child of them the rest of your life. Those vocations are non-negotiables. They're ones that are our duties. But we're talking now about, okay, you want to make a living. Okay, you want to bring in some income. You want to buy a field and sell it, yada, yada. Well, now with raising the child to see what they're going to enjoy doing the rest of their life, it begins with figuring out what they enjoy doing now.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, it seems as though we're having this conversation in the context of a rather short history of people kind of getting to decide what they want to do in a very isolated context of a country where, well, isn't that part of the American creed? Anyone can be anything they want to be if they just, what, set their mind to it. We should note that for most people and for most Christians throughout history, they were not making up their own minds about these things. We'll talk about that after this. You've been calling another lonely day. You can go your own way. Is the Proverbs 31 woman primarily a prescription of how to become a better wife, mother, woman, or friend? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's part 16 of our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. Talking about helping your children find their vocations. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest, author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible, and a forthcoming publication, Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating. Jonathan, tell us about your latest book.
Echo is a book that is intended to reawaken your imagination to things you thought you knew. It takes very seriously Dr. Luther's admonition that we cannot stop learning what God is not done teaching and what God will not finish teaching, and that we have nothing better to learn but it for the rest of our lives. He was talking about the Catechism. He was talking about the Ten Commandments, the Creed, and the Lord's Prayer. So what Echo does is it attempts to go back into that Catechism from a side angle, kind of to hit it from the side and ask, what does this mean? But without using all of the jargon you're so used to hearing, at least not until the very end. It asks you to, again, awaken your imagination to the amazingness, the fullness of understanding the worldview which our catechism develops. And the word echo itself is a good example of that. You know, the word catechism, you say it and people fall asleep. It's 50-cent theological word, it's long, it's cranky sounding. It sounds so awful. Well, it's just the word echo, only in Greek. Cat echo, catechism, to echo, and then the cat on the front is to echo again, right? But to echo, to repeat, to say again. You can do that with almost all of the catechism and its meaning. And so to have your mind opened and remember, we got nothing better to learn, we got nothing better to say. It's unbroken truth worth repeating.
You can pre-order Echo or order Broken by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. I want to avoid kind of the shoals on either side here, if we could, Jonathan, because in a lot of ways, we have the luxury of living in a country where you can, to a large degree, kind of choose between various options when it comes to your vocation ahead of you. And we should emphasize that as Christians, we are free to choose these things. It is not a sin to do one or the other if they're godly vocations. But at the same time, don't we have to also acknowledge that for the vast majority of Christians in history and a lot of people in the world still today, they don't have a choice of what they do with their life. They may be born into it.
That is true for many people. And I don't want to minimize the great gift it is to live in this land of opportunity. The options which we have before us as citizens of the U.S., or even really as first world citizens, to improve our state in life, as it were, the state of living or the living style and all that. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. And to be able to say, I don't like this job. I really don't want to do this thing forever. I'm going to try that. That also is a wonderful thing. What I don't want to do, though, is to be a party to the last 50 plus, maybe 100 years of secular thought, which has so idealized the concept of career, of having one vocation which is not in my house. Right? It's like defined by having nothing to do with my family. It's about me and the world. That we have this one thing that we prepare for, and then we go and we do, and that's life, and that's joy, and that's fulfillment. I think that's a bald-faced lie, and I think what we see with a lot of the stall out of my generation, I'm pushing late 30s, going to be 40 here soon, but really, you know, for me all the way down to the 20s, the so-called burnout generation, you know, all these kids who go off to college and then they come home and live in the basement because they can't find a job. Some of, or not, can't find a job, can't find the perfect job they're going to do the rest of their life that fulfills all of their identity and stops the existential fear of there being no purpose in life, right? That's what the question, what are you going to be when you grow up, has taught them to believe is possible. So that just the value of having a job in which I can pay my bills and actually afford to do what I want to do, that doesn't mean nearly as much as trying to define myself through these tasks of my hands. And again, to put that at nearly a religious level, a super spiritual level, is the real danger here, which robs children of their childhood in some ways. You know, notice the question again, what do you want to be when you grow up versus what do you like to do now, is basically telling the child, you don't matter much. You know, hey, aren't you cute? You don't matter, but someday you will. Tell me how, right? It robs the child of that beautiful freedom of childhood, which is that, and you know this, what do your kids want to do? They want to play. Even my oldest kids, what do they want to do? They want to play. And there's something beautiful about that. And we talk about it, like, oh, let the children play. But then our mental structures and the way we put pressures on them that their minds and hearts really aren't ready for betrays that a little bit. And again, I think this is part of this modern confusion of career and person. And I would tie this personally. I say this is part of the industrial era. This is a bit of the Marxist workers' paradise thinking coming over to us, that there is this one job I'm going to do, and that's who I really am as part of the great, I don't know, design of the world. We're just so much more wonderfully diverse than that. And so I want to hedge very, very hard against that, even though, I like you said, you know, we don't want to be heard to be saying, whatever your parents were, that's what you're going to be. Deal with it. That's what God said. Well, no, that's just poppycock.
Well, and doesn't life kind of, you've had this experience, I've had this experience, and I've tried to teach my children this repeatedly, especially given the fact that going through public schools, they were told from the time they were in junior high that they had to get on track, that right. There was a track out there that was meant for them, and they had to choose what it is now, and then stay on it for the next, well, in the case of junior high, for the next 12 years, and then after they had finished all that, then they would be on that track for the rest of their life. And that's almost as stark as it was presented to them. I've said, look, life kind of throws you multiple curveballs. And what I thought I was going to be doing when I was in high school, I didn't end up studying for. And what I thought I was going to be doing for when I graduated from seminary, I ended up doing for about a decade, and then lo and behold, I'm doing something else, and lo and behold, about 10 years later, I'm still doing the same thing, but in a completely different context. I could never have envisioned or imagined when I was 10 years old and someone asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up?
If you go and interview the most, what we would call successful people in the world, and I'm going to use a very secular worldly definition of successful, but people who have created Fortune 500 companies, technologies that changed the world, discovered cures for diseases, those kinds of things. A good number of them weren't planning to do that in their 30s. They pivoted sometime later in their 40s. They decided that, no, this is what I'm inspired to do now. And it's not that you want to teach frivolity. It's not that you want to encourage the child to think that you can make reckless, foolish decisions and everything's going to be fine. But it is true. I mean, as you said it, life throws you curveballs. And this idea that we're going to get you in to the right college. But first, to do that, we got to get you into the right high school, which means we got to get you into the right grade school, which means we got to get you into the right preschool. So you got to go to the right childcare, so we can get you all the way up to college with a good SAT. So you can get the right job. So you can get hired by the right firm. So you can work there for 50 years. And then retire with the benefits package, and then you'll really get to live. That's a myth. There was a time when companies like Chrysler had systems. You got in, you stayed in, you retired, you know, you paid your dues, and then you have a pension. That world has gone the way of, I don't want to say the way of cable TV. Cable TV is not gone yet, but it kind of is in some ways, right? It certainly isn't there as the norm anymore. That world has been thrown a curveball not only by the decline of American society in itself, but the rise of internet technologies in a global economy. There is just no guarantee that the right set of choices is going to get you the right job that's going to make it so you can work there forever. And so don't expect that. It's not that. So, yeah, I mean, if you really, really love test tubes and you want to cure cancer, you do need to at some point pick a tract, and you're going to need 10 years, 12 years of work to do that, you know, to get to that point. It's going to be dog eat dog, a cutthroat. You got to get financing and all this kind of stuff. But sure, if that's your passion, do it. But you don't need to make that decision when you're 9, and you don't necessarily need to make that decision when you're 20. What's important instead, I would say, is to, wherever you are, look around at what's in front of you that you can do, and then do the things that drive you. Now, certainly, you got to hedge this with the Ten Commandments, right? We're not talking about going and doing evil. We're not talking about being self-serving. But it gets me to, you know, one of the verses. I got a couple of verses I'd love to talk about, but one of the verses in the Bible that I think is just so potent for bringing to the surface what our life with each other looks like is Ephesians 4, verse 28, where Paul is admonishing the Christians who have become Christian. They've come out of the pagan world. They've come out of the world of sin through repentance. And he says, "Let the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he might have something to share with anyone in need." Now, this is valuable on multiple levels. I mean, the most shocking probably is that the reason the guy's supposed to get a job isn't so he can retire and have fun later, and it isn't so he can have fun now. He's supposed to get a job so he can share with those who are in need, so he can take care of those who can't take care of themselves. I mean, that's stunning in and of itself. But notice the shift that takes place. What's a thief do with his hands? He uses his hands to harm other people. What's the Christian do with their hands? You use your hands to help other people, right? Labor. What is labor? What is, you know, we think of that word and we think of pain, but it doesn't have to be that. It can be a laborious thing is indeed painful, but if we think of work as stewardship or as care or as craft, right? Maybe that's a better word in a sense. Let him craft with his hands, doing honest work. Our hands were given to us to be who we are. Like on a super level, right? I mean, look at your hand right now. It's who you are. Notice that? Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, they are who you are, and yet they're who you are for other people as well. You can't share your heart. You can't share your mind. That's all on the inside. I mean, you can speak, but no one's ever going to diffuse with your soul, right? But your hands are there to be a connection point for others, all the way from, you know, your spouse, who you touch her face or hold hands at a movie, right, or whatever. I mean, obviously, there's more than that, but you know, there's that part point of contact. But then there is what the hands are useful for and what you're able to do with them. And so wherever you are, however old you are, what are you good at doing with your hands? What of those things that you do with your hands do you want to do more of? And the more you do of it, the better you're going to get at it. How can you then see it as a thing which serves others? Because the more it's useful to others, if you talk capitalism, the more it's going to be useful to, you're going to be useful to them. I mean, that's how so much of today's economy and especially the internet economy is going, is people are just asking, you know, what do people need done? And you go find a way to get it done, and you can start a business. Now, I don't know that I want to talk to my 9-year-old about that yet either. I want to talk to my 9-year-old about what my 9-year-old's hands are good for. Yeah. And encourage her to explore those things and find the ones that she enjoys and pursue them. Got a response to that, or I can keep going?
Now, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss more of helping our children find their vocations. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest, author of the book, Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible, and his forthcoming book, Echo, Unbroken Truth, Worth Repeating. He's senior pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Rockford, Illinois, and host of a radio talk show called Sharper Iron. Women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high-degree thief. They may call you doctor, or they may call you chief, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Christ has died. Christ is risen. Christ will come again. This glorious good news is and always has been too good not to share. It compelled Peter, Paul, and the other apostles to the very ends of the earth, and it continues to drive Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionaries even today. Learn more here in the April issue of The Lutheran Witness magazine. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheran Elementary School Association is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During April, if you open a federal FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to the Lutheran Elementary School Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Christ Lutheran is a welcoming congregation in Rochester, Minnesota, providing traditional liturgy and hymns, word and sacraments. Call 507-289-0271. That's 507-289-0271. Or visit ChristRochester.org. Christ Lutheran Church, receiving and sharing Christ's mercy.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky, and St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues, Etc. 300. Where are you going?
Where do you go? Are you looking for answers? Welcome back to Issues, Etc. It's part 16 of our series, Raising Christian Children in an Age of Secular Progressivism. Today, helping your children find a vocation. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. Jonathan, I heard you say something earlier in our conversation that I'd like you to expand on just a little bit more. That has to do with there is a distinction here between your sons and your daughters. What is it?
Yeah, and how scary it is to expand on that these days, is it not? With the way that the culture doesn't want to hear it, it would seem. The difference between my son and my daughter is that one is a boy, man, and the others are girls, women. And this doesn't mean that neither of them are, or one of them is less or more human than the other, but it does mean that they are a different kind of human. And with that comes a whole complex and beautiful panoply of distinctions, which don't really exist as a black and white reality, although some of them do, particularly the way that their sexuality works to procreate children, for all, that very evidently, scientifically, is a black and white reality. But a lot of the other differences between man and woman, as created and designed by God, exist on a spectrum where there are tendencies. And so, you know, unless you're just willfully ignorant, it's quite obvious that the male physical form has a tendency to be a little bit larger, a little bit stronger, even a little bit faster than the female form. And the female form, in converse, doesn't necessarily have those things, although it does have a tendency to be a little more able to endure pain and to withstand pain, levels of tolerance with regard to that. It has, or she has,
amplified ability to have compassion or emotional connection with other people. This is not to say that there's no tall women or strong women or fast women, and it's not to say there's no compassionate or emotional or pain-tolerating men. It is only to say that there is an edge to our created design which distinguishes us when you do the math and add us all up. And that in that, some of these things are connected to what we were created to be and do with our hands. The gifts that we've been given for the sake of those who are around us, those who are in our community. And in this regard as well, it's kind of profound. You know, when a man and a woman have their sexual relation in marriage and procreate a child, and the child comes out, there really is, naturally speaking at least, only one of them that can feed the child. Now we have ways to make sure the child doesn't starve, and it's fine to use a bottle if you want to. Okay, we can talk about that. It's your call. But at the same time, naturally speaking, designedly speaking, there's only one of them that has a particular set of skills connected to the hands, that is for the sake of feeding that child. And while that's happening, and as the body is changing for the woman during that time to make that possible, she's even generally more, not as quick, less strong, less able to move around and say, go hunt animals, or even go out and forage for roots, right? The man has that ability, and maybe doesn't have the need really to care for, to cherish, to hold the child as much as she does. Now, again, these are all on spectrums. The point being, though, that there is a distinctiveness between us, and it is united to our relationship with each other and our relationship to community as family makers, as procreators, and that this will have an impact on the way you decide the answer to the question, what am I going to do today? What am I going to do tomorrow? As I grow, what am I going to be and do when I come of age? What do I have to be and do when I come of age? Do I need to provide or do I not need to provide? Or can I just help provide? All of those are impacted by whether you are a man or a woman, which again, so for me and my children, who I want to encourage to embrace these roles as the real place where you're going to find your purpose in life, right? The purpose in life is not going to be in the career work. It is ultimately going to be in the humans who you are one with. I want to encourage them then to assess all the other vocations they may or may not have through that lens as secondary, valuable still, but secondary. And so I don't want my 9-year-old daughter, who's perfectly content to think about how she's going to grow up and get married and have kids and it's going to be great. I don't want her having to compare herself to the feminist agenda, which says you're a useless rag if you're not actually out there in an office serving some guy who's not your husband, so eventually you can take his place. You know, I just don't think that's something that my 9-year-old needs to have to deal with just now, right? And so the question brings that to the child. So I don't know if that's where you wanted or maybe too far, but answer to the question.
Well, so what we're talking about here is we're going to make a distinction between sons and daughters. And I think it's very valuable to tell our daughters, as you had mentioned earlier, that the expectation of them, of society, may be go out and be just like the boys. But that is not an expectation that they need to cater to.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I tell my daughters that. I said, look, if you really want to be a nurse or a doctor and save the world from cancer, great, cool. We'll try to help you make it happen. I'm not sure I can send you to school. We'll have to figure that out. We'll get you there, though. But then just realize this is going to be something which makes some of the other options in life a little harder to do, right? So in terms of having a family of 5 to 8 kids and staying home with them, well, probably not going to happen. You can't do both those things, right? So what does that mean then for your relationships and your life choices? With the boys, a little bit different. It's like, son, you're going to have to do something with your hands to put food on the table for the people around you. And you know what? You know who's I'd say it jestingly. You know who's first on that list? That's your old man. You know, as I'm sitting there crotchety and unable to move with no retirement package, you better be, you know, putting food on my table for me. And, you know, again, tongue in cheek on that a little bit. But to prepare him to do battle with the world for the sake of the community to whom he is connected. And that does include his parents, that includes his sisters, that includes his wife and children, God willing, should he have them, that includes the congregation to which he joins. And it's not that a girl can't serve in all of those capacities as well, but to understand the distinctiveness between the have-tos. Someone said it so well the other day, and it really, really stuck with me. Oh, it was so, you know, if you're in bed at night with your significant other and you're a man and you're a woman and you hear a window pane shatter out in the front hallway. Now really, just take a step back and put this through the prism of modern day America and what we say. Because what we say is that both the man and the woman should go out together at the same time because they're teamwork people, right? They're partners and they're absolutely equal. And they should go out, or maybe the woman should make the man stay in bed and she should go out because she can, anything he can do, she can do better. But really, what's going to happen naturally in that moment? The man's going to want to protect. Even if he's afraid, he's going to overcome his fear to go figure out what's going on. He's going to say, honey, stay here. Kids, stay here. Because that's what he does. That's what he's made to do. And similarly, the woman's going to like die like a bear defending her cubs at the end of the day, but only after the husband's given his life for her, right? And to see that order is to see the beauty of headship, marriage, identity, which is vocation, and is also, hint, to see who Christ is for us as our husband, king, and God. But that's another story in a sense.
In that vein, you also wanted to talk about Proverbs 31. This is much a subject of discussion around here since our book of the month is demystifying the Proverbs 31 woman. There's more to it than simply a picture of women, but there is a picture of a woman there, isn't there?
There is. And you know, I didn't know that was the book of the month. That's really cool that it is. I love Proverbs 31 because it does amplify the diversity of woman in a way that makes the modern feminist lie really apparent for what it is. Because the modern feminist lie would say that teaching distinctions between the sexes, teaching that man and woman are created different or have different spectrums on which our skill sets lie, is to say that women are stupid and incapable. And like that's the only thing that they could be understood as. There is no other category but chauvinism for the conversation to be put into. Yet Proverbs 31 is such a complex, open-ended, shifting reality. The woman is not, to refer to the very crass phrase, you know, barefoot and pregnant, you know, shut up and stay in the kitchen. Like there's none of that going on in this portrait of a woman who is busy with her hands and attending to the things of her hands. But with that, I kind of want to touch on, before we get into there, you know, there's a couple, I did some looking for the word hands in the Bible this week, because I knew that the Proverbs was going to have some of this, but I had forgotten about 1 Timothy 2 and Titus 2, where Paul exhorts men in every place to pray and lift holy hands without anger or quarreling. I'm actually convinced that has nothing to do with prayer, the lifting holy hands part. I know for many people that they say, oh, okay, so when we pray, we lift our hands. There's even some Christian tradition with that. But I think the comma that the editors have put there is well placed, that we're supposed to pray and put an and there, and we're supposed to lift our hands, our holy hands, our Christian hands, without anger or quarreling. We're supposed to use our hands not for anger or quarreling, but for good things. And then it says for the women to likewise be filled with modesty and self-control and to use their hands for good works. So you have this distinction between men's and women's hands there, at least lightly. And then in Titus chapter 2, where Paul is exhorting the elderly ladies of the congregation to do something with their hands, he says they should be teaching the young women what to do with their lives. And he amplifies, he puts at the front end, love your husbands and children, be self-controlled, pure. And then there's the phrase, working at home. Now, I would also kind of debate the ESV translation here a little bit from working at home. The word carries a connotation of busy about the home, right? Having an attendance to the home. So it's not like never leave the house or else, or you can't make a living anywhere. It's more along with, you know, are you concerned with your household? Yeah, to have a concern for your husband and children, to have your mind set toward the good of them. And then that's what, that very idea, to be busy in the mind with the things of your home, with the things of your people. That's what Proverbs 31 teaches the godly woman is always about. So that as she does these many things with her hands, it's just this long, long list. In fact, you want to give yourself some stress, make this the list of your to-dos for the next 3 months. I don't think anybody could really pull it off. But she seeks wool and flax, works with willing hands. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff. Her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. Right? So she is active with her hands for the sake of those around her. And then one of the last lines in the entire thing is, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Right? Again, so her hands are busy with her mind set on the needs of her people. In a specific way, right, to give them what they need. Much of the work that she's described as doing has to do with actually bringing home the bacon, finding a way to put food on the table, as opposed to the distinction here for the man a little bit is more in the realm of the protectorate, the one who must go to the city gate and handle the defense of the town against the Canaanites and all this kind of stuff. The Proverbs 31 then closes also by exhorting what this woman deserves for embracing her vocation, her identity, that give her the fruit of her hands, it says. Let her works praise her in the gates, right? So that the word of this woman who has embraced whatever it is she's good at with her hands for the sake of everyone around her, from her husband to her children to her neighbors, that this is something to bring praise to that person, a godly wife worth more than jewels. What I really want to take from that, though, is I don't want this just to be about what woman should do or what man should do. There certainly is an edge to this. We have our identities in Christ. We have the sex God has created us to be. We have those spectrums that we want to understand and embrace for the sake of serving the neighbors in the best possible way. But I want to bring this back to that opening question again. What are you going to be when you grow up? I would have loved it if she wasn't prepped for it, but if my daughter had just said, a woman, what are you going to do? Something awesome, I'm going to use my hands to help people. Why does it have to be that I must now today, whether I'm 9 or 15 or 20 or 45, decide that I can be judged by only one thing I do with my hands, so peg me in that corner and I'll never do anything else? How much of that is the drudgery of the American commute, right? That's just the way we've learned to think of ourselves, as opposed to being these complex creatures, which God has made to love many things and to want to do many things with our hands, and who can change those things up, who can pivot and turn and seek new things to do, who are going to be forced to it by life as this, that, or the other thing comes to pass, and some jobs don't even exist anymore, and new ones are being made all the time. What I want to be able to do is take this whole conversation we've had, Todd, which has really been focused more on like an adult level, and ask, how can I help my children find their way into this world and not be chained to assumptions that neither the Bible nor reality actually would put upon them, but only our really sick culture does, and instead embrace the moment, embrace the now, embrace their hands, embrace what they've been created by God to be in terms of their sex and their sexuality, and then take those days as they come. When our Lord says, do not worry about tomorrow, tomorrow will have enough trouble for itself, He's not kidding. He's not kidding. One foot in front of the other. Don't ask your kid, what are you going to be when you grow up? Ask them, what do you want to do today? And what you want to do today, what they find interesting today, is going to be the thing they need to do so that when they're grown, they are going to be useful and glad to be useful when they get there.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. Part 16 of our series, Raising Christian Children in an Age of Secular Progressivism, today, helping your children find a vocation. When we come back, there are vocations which we do not choose. We'll talk about what they are after this. Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan.
These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholes. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christon logo at issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Canagraph of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Canagraph making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. We're talking about helping your children find a vocation as part of our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. Speaking of vocation, Concordia University, Wisconsin Online offers 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree. They'll even waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Just click the Concordia University, Wisconsin logo at issuesetc.org and enter the promo code ISSUES. Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin Online. Jonathan, talk about the vocations that lay ahead for our children that they don't necessarily choose.
Well, we've already talked quite a bit about man and woman, right? So if you are going to be married as a human being and define marriage in any way as having to do with procreating the species, then you don't really get to choose which one of those two things you want to be. But let me go a little bit further on this one as well. There is something about our hyper-belief in our own sovereignty that would lead us to think, we were talking about this earlier, you know, we live in a world where you get to choose what you want to do. You can change jobs if you want to. Now, that's how we experience it. But there's also a greater, a more transcendent reality that all of our days are already written in our Lord's book, that he has set a path before us to follow, that he has prepared the good works for us to do. And so all of these things really are gifts to us which he gives. And I think particularly if you are one of those 20-year-olds or 25-year-olds or even 30-year-olds who's kind of trapped in the, man, I haven't picked my career yet. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Who am I? What a wretch. I've got nothing good to offer. You know, to take a step back and just remember, no. It's not really up to you to define yourself. It's not really up to you to choose any of your vocations. They're all gifts. They're all gifts. And this, it does bring up one of the things that's maybe a little more challenging as a parent. So we've talked about encouraging your child to do what they like to do and to pursue things that they find interesting. I'm not saying, you know, play Minecraft for the next 40 years without ever eating or drinking or sleeping, right? Well, yeah, okay. There's a point at which you also have to say, this thing you're doing is entirely self-serving, or even this thing you're doing is not something that you're getting better at. You know, anyone who's watched the tryouts for, say, American Idol knows that not everyone who wants to sing or enjoys singing necessarily can sing. But again, on the more positive side of this, if you're in that angst, that struggle, I just haven't figured out what to do yet with my life, remember, your Lord, he does indeed have his eye on the sparrow. He does indeed clothe the flowers of the field, and you are of far more value than sparrows and flowers to him. He's really not as concerned with what you're going to be when you grow up in a career sense. That's not your identity for him. Your identity is as a man or woman in Christ whom he has bound to his body, the church, and that therefore you have hands with which to help others. And so if you haven't figured out how to have the 8-year education track career, great. If you're just working to pay the bills, great. That's actually good. That's actually duty. Does that mean you should just sit back and not try to do something else and find more fulfillment if you're not getting fulfilled? No. Go find some fulfillment. Find a job. Find a workload that you really want to do that inspires you. But also know this too. You know, as the book by Cal Newport, So Good They Can't Ignore You, is very, very clear on, people don't love things just because they love them. True love that leads to greatness in what you do comes from doing something until you get good enough at it that you find the beauty in it. True artistry, true talent, is not native born. It's something that practice eventually creates. So, rather than worrying about what you're going to be when you grow up, put your hand to something. And if your hand keeps doing it, that's awesome. Keep doing it. And if you get to a point where your mind says, I can't take one more day of this, maybe before you get to that point, lay a few plans for what else could I try to do that's not going to upset the apple cart of my budget and my income and so forth. And if you're dealing with kids, it's the exact same thing, right? Having them put their hands to things for the sake of getting better at them so they can explore even further. And then getting back to as well, intentionally, even against their will, because, you know, they won't like math or what have you, exposing them to as many things as possible and saying, okay, you love this, but I want you to try this and this and this too. Because right now, you're a sponge and it's time to just see what's there. Don't worry about how you're going to make it all turn into an income in 30 years. We don't know what the economy is going to look like in 30 years. You know, we could be living in caves, or we could be, you know, they're trying to make us into computers. How about right now you get exposed to as many potential things of value as you can? And of course, in that, the most valuable of all being these things we're talking about, applying the Ten Commandments, the Creed, and the Lord's Prayer to your mind, your worldview, your understanding, your real identity, your real hope, the real reason you want to no longer steal, but find something honest to do with your hands.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is senior pastor at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Rockford, Illinois. He hosts a radio talk show called Sharper Iron. He's author of the book, Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible, and a forthcoming book, Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
In Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Joy Pullman joins us to talk about those statewide teacher strikes. She's managing editor of The Federalist. Bishop Keith Ackerman will be with us to talk about pressure that's being put on members of the Episcopal Church to use same-sex liturgies. They used to say that they could opt out. Now that option seems to be, that door or window seems to be closing. And then Manya Brashear Pashman, religion reporter for the Chicago Tribune, who's been covering the ongoing allegations of sexual misconduct against Bill Hybels, will join us to talk about Bill Hybels' sudden resignation last night amidst those allegations. Stay tuned for Hour 2 of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armedforces. The LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.